This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, and welcome to episode 4 of A Good Cry. 4. We did it. There are now as many episodes of this podcast as there are Alvin and the Chipmunks movies, and that is something to be proud of. We're tied with Alvin, we're tied with Simon, we are tied with Theodore, and I think that's all the Chipmunks, but I am not sure. I just wanted to say hi to some of the people who reached out this week. Jenny, Carol, Robert, Brandy, Michael, everyone else, I really appreciate your messages, and thanks for listening. If you enjoy the podcast, I hope you will subscribe, I hope you will review, I hope you will rate it. That's how we get people to listen, so don't be shy, go ahead and do it. Also, I've got a couple shows coming up on October 23rd at Caveat in Manhattan with my friend Joe Firestone, who's got a great special out on Peacock right now that I really hope you'll watch. And on November 7th at Union Hall with my friend Pat Regan. I hope you will check them out. Okay, grief stuff. Today, I'm thinking about what the dead leave behind. Could be anything. Could be a bunch of magazines you found in an office. Could be an instrument they used to play. But just as often, it's things that are not tangible. A listener named Christina sent the question, what smells make you think of your loved one? For me, it's the very specific smell of the hospital where Fisher was, and I smell it every time I go in there, which, you know, we still go from time to time for checkups for my kids. For you, maybe it's the smell of some food or the smell of a park or, I don't know, but I love that question just because I'd never thought of it before. What smells make you think of your loved one? The dead also leave memories. And in my case, Fisher left something very rare, which is a twin brother. And because I have him, I know what Fisher would have looked like, sounded like, probably acted like. It's the most amazing thing we could have been left. I feel lucky for it. And it's weird because almost all the time that I look at my living son, I feel only this titanic, overwhelming love and joy. But also every once in a while, because I love him so much, that love makes me think, shit, I was supposed to have two of these. Can you imagine? I mean, wouldn't that have been amazing? Today's guest is the radiant Alyssa Limperis. She's a joyful performer and person who, among other things, makes these videos where she plays her mom that are some of the most purely fun scenes that you will ever see. And she's also a griever. We talk about her dad, Jim, who died from cancer. And one of the things that sticks with me from our conversation is that even though her dad is dead, he left a lot of great stuff behind, including Alyssa, who keeps so much of him, including his sense of humor. So if you're laughing at Alyssa, which you will, you're also seeing how funny Jim must have been. And that's pretty wonderful. Finally, I'm recording this on the day that we are celebrating my son's birthday. That's S-O-N-S apostrophe. I don't think Fisher listens to podcasts wherever he is, but if he does, Fisher, we got your brother a phone. He had soccer practice. He ate pumpkin pie instead of cake, which I think is gross, but it's not my birthday. It's his, and it's yours. Happy birthday, Fisher. This is episode 4 of A Good Cry. Thanks for listening. I hope it helps. Hi, Alyssa. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. We had some fun times getting set up, and now...
We really did. We really did.
Here we are. I know we're in the COVID times, in the quarantine, but is there anything good happening? Did you do anything good or fun today?
Oh, well, you know, I really have been missing coffee shops. I like go all the time. That's where I like to write. I love just some nice strong espresso, some good coffee.
Okay.
And I'd been having obviously drip this whole time. And I ordered for myself some oat milk lattes. Mm-hmm. And maybe once a week I treat myself to an oat milk latte on ice. And
wow.
It's so crazy how it makes my whole day. So I had one before this.
Is oat milk, is that good? It sounds to me like it would taste like dust. That's what I imagine oat milk does.
Well, I'm a vegan. So that to me, it's like that's kind of my whole food group is like different varieties of dust.
Got it. Yum.
Yes. I love dust. Yes.
Mm.
So it's not like it probably doesn't taste good, but like in my range of things, it's a delicacy.
Yeah, I got you. I understand.
I had dried chickpeas once in my car as a snack. And James Dwyer, you know,
of
James
course,
Dwyer,
the infamous James
good
Dwyer.
Friend of the show. The infamous
huge friend of the show.
He had one and I believe he almost choked and he was like, these are a danger. These you can't have these. These are like, I'm gonna choke on these. And they were a delicacy for me. So,
oh, interesting. Yeah. That sounds like it would taste like stones is what I would guess.
That's right.
Okay, cool. That's good. I'm trying to think of good things that happened to me today. Beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop.
So what do we got going on here? We in a laundry? Like, I'm loving the amount of towels you have. That's very satisfying to
folks at home cannot see this, of course, because it is what's known as a podcast.
Right, I am
coming at them from inside of the walk-in closet in my home. So you are looking
I'll tell you what, guys. He has a beautiful amount of linens and towels to the degree that you're never having to use a damp towel, are you?
This is a compliment that is so strong that it is clearly an insult. And I haven't...
No. It's that I only have two towels. So I'm often, you know, it's like, do I do laundry or do I use the damp towel? So I got stinky towels all the time, but you...
I have a hoarder level of towels is the number of towels that I have.
Oh, it's beautiful. Aspirational.
No one has touched these towels in months.
Oh, gosh. That is... Wow. That's luxury. That's adulthood. That's like... That's kind of the benefit. I feel like you have kids. That's the benefit is you get to... You have a lot of products at home.
Yes, that's the big benefit of having children. Many, many products. I was going to say, the only good thing that happened to me today so far, besides doing this, is that I slept until like 9:30, which is big for us. For here that's big.
And do your kids now sleep till that time too?
No. Kids are up a little bit earlier and they start school. But if my wife and I are both home, then it sort of alternates which one of us will be the one to get up with them. And so she is working. She's a nurse. So the days that she works, she's out of the house at like 5 a.m. So then I'm up early those days. But then like alternating on the day she's off, we take turns. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Of course. She's a nurse. That's what an intense time for you guys.
It is very intense. She is truly, and I think she would recoil at this description, but she's a little bit of a hero, honestly.
Absolutely. I get emotional talking to my friends who are doctors or nurses. I think that they have some superpowers. Or when I think of people going into war or like dark, scary times, you think of them as like not like you, like they must have some superhero abilities. And then when it's your friend, I think there's a real thing of like, oh my God, you're just like me. So you are doing this in face of the fear. Like you are really, there's a real realization of like, no, you're not. Your superpower is just that you are selfless enough that you're like going into this.
Yeah.
Like you're obviously still scared. You're just, yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. That's like truly what like bravery is. It's like, because I think some people mistake bravery for like people who have no fear, but it's really like, oh, you have a fear and then you're doing the thing anyway. That is wild. Verging on becoming an episode of the podcast just about my wife being a nurse, which honestly would be fine. You can interview me or we can get her in here to jump in the closet. But we are here to talk about grief, Alyssa. And
yes.
So before we had you on, I read blog posts of yours and stuff that you had on your website that were incredibly moving. But instead of just reading them out loud to the people who are listening, I wondered if you would tell us a little bit about your dad. Is that cool?
So, yes, definitely. I'm blindsided by this. Whoa, dude. I don't know where this is coming from on all days today after connectivity issues. So my dad was one of my, you know, he was my hero. We were best friends. He was like a very big influence on my comedy. We grew up watching comedy together and doing comedy like really bad, dumb sketches together in community theater.
Wait, you what are we talking about? What do you mean?
We had like some community theater in my town where we would both do plays, and then sometimes they had talent shows and we would put on sketches. Like I remember one time my dad was we were both in a Christmas Carol, and I think like he really wanted to get one of the big parts, and they gave him some like side part. He was like the Candyman guy, and I don't even know if that's a real like thing. And so he would take a lot of liberties in rehearsal. So I remember one rehearsal, his line was like, "I didn't promise you that," or something. And my dad started singing, "I never promised you a rose garden." And I swear to God, after rehearsal, the director sat us all down and was like, "To everybody, we have to stay on book." But my dad was very fearless. He was not afraid to like break rules, or he really was very big on just like living in the moment and having as much fun as he possibly could. And we kind of transitioned from doing sketches and stuff together to running together. Running was like a big part of his life and became a big part of mine. And he was super healthy, and we hiked across Rhode Island together, and you know, we went on a 50-mile bike ride.
Wow.
And then I went back to New York City. And then the next weekend I got a call that my dad like had a brain tumor. And I really remember, I'm sure you have this moment too, where that's the moment where I was like, everything is different now. Like I barely remember life before that moment. It feels like a different life than the moment I knew my dad was going to die.
And how old were you?
I was 23, I want to say. Yeah.
And you said, where was your dad? Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Seekonk, Massachusetts.
Okay.
And I was living in Manhattan. And so, yeah, I came back to Manhattan, and I would visit home a lot. And then basically once he got sick, I went back to Seekonk, and then I didn't really leave. I came back and forth a little, but I didn't really leave until well after he passed away.
And so when you found you got the phone call, it was your mother who called you?
You know, it was really weird. My parents were coming to help me move. It was like the day that I was supposed to be moving out of my apartment. So they were coming to move. So I got a call from them being like, "Hey, we're like, you know, 3 hours out. We'll see you in 3 hours." And then I got a call, I want to say like 2 minutes after. And I knew, like, I was like, this is something is wrong, because I don't know. It just was. And they called and they were both screaming and crying, and I just heard like, "Your dad has a brain tumor," and like, "We're turning around." And I had like, my room was emptied, and I had three roommates, like two dogs, and I just like went into a closet and I just like cried, and then I left and I was like, "I gotta go." And then my brother and I, he was in Manhattan too, we both went to the suburbs of Massachusetts. So we both left the city, and then we lived in the suburbs with my parents in the house we grew up in for a year.
So you like immediately made the decision with your brother. You're like, "We're going home."
We didn't know, you know, you don't know. So like in the moment they were like, it could be benign. It could be like, we didn't even really know yet what glioblastoma was. We didn't know how severe it was. We just knew like, let's be at the hospital with him right now. And I think we each brought one bag of clothes. Like I in no means ever thought I was going to be gone for a year. We both were just like, we got to get home like soon right now. And then we'll take it from there. And then we just kind of never ended up coming back for a while.
And can you, I know it's obviously tough, but when did you feel like you knew that your father was going to die? Did you feel like you knew right away, or was it something that took, like, did he have like a fighting chance for a while, or what was the outlook?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a bad disease. So, you know, I probably didn't know right away. I probably didn't know right away. I knew like this wasn't good. And then I went to the hospital with slept over at the hospital with my mom and my dad, and that he had gotten a scan. And so he was waiting to see the results of the scan, and it was Halloween. And they came back in and basically said, like, "Your tumor, you have a cancerous tumor in your brain, and, you know, we're going to do surgery, but for now you have to like stay in the hospital." And I got a text from this guy I hooked up with probably in like high school or college, maybe, being like, "Yo, I'm drunk. You want to hook up?" And yeah, that was, it was another moment where I was just like, oh, this is so, like, that feeling of like, my world is like so dark right now. I'm in this room. We just got news that my dad's probably going to die. I'm with my parents. Like, and then outside of this hospital room, everything's the same. Like I would have 2 days ago, I would have been like, give me the address, drop a pin. Yeah. But you know, now it was just like, I don't even think I responded. Cause it was just kind of like, my world is so, it's so different. I can't even like interact with this because I'm in such a, yeah, just the quickness in which your world changes. And then, I mean, I remember my dad really didn't want to like look it up. He was a big optimist. He was a big, just like, let's just keep one day at a time. Let's keep focusing. And my brother got a hotel room for us, like right near the hospital. And I was a little naive probably too. I probably didn't want to look it up. And I remember getting to the hospital and talking to my brother about it. And he was just like, I don't know when, but like dad will, the reason dad will die is like from this brain tumor. And so that was probably my first, like, then I started looking it up, and there's a lot of misinformation. So you can kind of get, you can go either way. And then probably like 3 weeks after he got the scan, you come in for like an update. And at that point, the doctor told us like, you have a certain amount of years to live. And then that's when we were like, oh, this is, you know.
That's so interesting that you and your dad were both like, let's just not learn about this.
Yeah. It's a little peek into my entire life. Just like, no, it's kind of like just, yeah, you know, closing the door and just being like, I'll deal with that another day.
And I wonder if that, because you said your brother was the opposite, right? He was like really looking into it. I wonder, like in my situation, it was my wife, really the entire pregnancy. I think that's maybe like sadly common, but it was my wife who was like all up in all the information all the time. And I was just like, I don't know, whatever she said, that sounds right to me.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. I think like it's, you know, it's probably denial or it's fear. It's just not wanting to, you know. But it did shift. Like basically once I found out about it, then it did kind of become a crazy, like I felt like every night we were just researching trials and stuff we could be doing and diets. I learned everything about anti-cancer diets, and we called every doctor we knew. And so
what were some of those things? Is your veganism, does it pertain to that at all?
It does. Yeah. So I was a vegetarian before this. And then I read this book, Crazy Sexy Diet, which is not what it sounds like. It's like, what a devastating thing for me to have to say out loud. And that's, yeah, that's just me dieting while my dad was sick. That has nothing to do with this. That was just me being like, well, I got some time. Might as well lose a few LBs. Let's read a book.
Okay, so we got a book called Crazy Sexy Diet. Product placement for that book.
Yeah, this woman had amazing woman had stomach cancer, and it was a much slower moving cancer than brain cancer, and she slowed it down and stopped it through becoming vegan. So there's like, that book changed my life. And I had an eating disorder. I have an eating disorder. I'm constantly in and out of like recovery for anorexia. And that book probably helped me the most with like relearning how to eat food and how a reminder of like what we put in our body is fuel, and that it's like what you eat it goes into your body and your organs. So of course that has something to do with your overall health.
Yeah.
So we went vegan with my dad.
And so your dad did that also?
Yeah.
And then how long did he live for after you moved home?
So it was 1 year basically to the dot, which is so, it's so crazy because, you know, my dad was so, so healthy, and this disease just like ravages you. It was just like, in retrospect, like the worst, because my dad was like super strong and healthy. And then every day, week, month, he lost more abilities. So it was like, you know, at first he was okay. And then slowly he kind of was like slower to walk, and then he limped, and then he couldn't use his legs. Then he couldn't use his arms. Then he couldn't speak. Then he couldn't see. So it was like a real tough thing to watch because, you know, it was just, yeah. So by the end it was, you know, we ran a race every 4th of July together as a family since forever growing up, which was like my world's worst hated tradition. Everyone else 4th of July, they go like, they eat hot dogs. And every 4th of July I had like diarrhea. Cause I was like, I gotta run this stupid race. I hated it so much. I was like, everyone else, like, yeah, we're getting drunk. We're doing fireworks. My family's like doing calisthenics at like 6 a.m. to go do this race. But my dad basically like he had like this weird 3-week chunk where he did really well and he ran the race and we all ran the race together. And it was just this like crazy thing. And then basically from that moment on, like, I want to say August, like that was probably our last good month. And then August, things just started going downhill.
So after the diagnosis, he was still well enough for a period of time that he could run that race.
Absolutely. And that's the fucked up part of this disease is like my dad felt, aside from a headache, he felt totally fine. So to have someone be like, no, you're dying, when you're like, I'm not dying, I just have a headache. It's for a pretty long time. The only thing was he was getting seizures and headaches. So it was like he was totally with it and still very sharp. And then just, slowly, basically the tumor just grows onto your brain and it takes different parts away.
How did you process that degradation of your dad from like this athlete into someone who had like been stripped of his vitality? How did you feel during that time?
Yeah, I mean, I think I like grew up pretty fast. So I feel a real sense of like, you know, we didn't like really have help around. So we were like doing all this stuff. So there's something that happens kind of in your body where it just, I felt like I kind of became a parent pretty quickly, or it was like, my dad doesn't want to know about this disease. He's not doing well. And he just needs me to like be here. And like, it really felt like, oh, this is what being a parent is. Like, you take the brunt of the thing and you try to soften it to them. So it was just a lot of like, I just remember my dad asking me like, why can't I read? Like, why can't I read anymore? And I just like, ugh, I remember feeling so helpless because it's like, I just remember mostly wishing there was something I could do to like take it away and feeling very trapped with like, I can't do anything but be here.
That feels as a parent very spot on for what parenting is when like your kids are suffering. I have obviously a son who passed away, but my son who's alive, the suffering that he has is obviously minor in comparison. But even when he's like, my knee hurts, I'm like, oh God, it hurts him so much. Can't it just be, if it were just my knee, that would be so much easier.
Totally. I probably collapsed a lot more afterwards and struggled a lot more afterwards. But during, you almost like go into this mode of, okay, this is just what I have to do. And I think if I thought about it too much, like if I think about what I had to do now, it's overwhelming to even think about it. But when it happens, you're just kind of doing it and you're like, this is just the next step in what I have to do.
That's, I mean, that rings so true to me. It's very like, you like, I have to kind of soldier on. I mean, we were talking about my wife before, that like nurse thing. I think it is just like,
yes,
this is what I'm doing. I am doing this. So it's, and it's going to be done. It's that same thing when like, you know, you're in the midst of tragedy where you're like, okay, well, I don't really have time to decide whether I'm going to do this or not. I'm doing,
that's exactly
it's what's happening.
Yeah, exactly.
And then afterwards, I don't know if your experience was like mine, but afterwards you talked about collapsing. It's like, I didn't really have the full breakdowns until after.
And I'll say this, I don't know if I still have. I think that there's grief is, I am still dealing with what it means and what it does to me. I think that I get so mad. I feel angry a lot at stupid things. And then I'm like, that's because I'm mad about not having a dad, or that's because I'm like sad about what happened, you know. But it's like, life is so hard because you just have to keep going. And so then my mom was, it's like your dad dies and then I'm writing the obituary, and then you're like, my mom is like, there should be like, the logistical nightmare of someone dying and then you having to plan a party is chaotic. It's like, this is the thing you hate most, like planning an organized thing and getting people together. Like, okay, now you have to do that while, like, it's just crazy. Yeah.
You were saying that you feel like you have this issues with anger that stem partially from this. What do you think it is that you've held on to that maybe needs to be expressed in some way?
I think it's sometimes just the feeling of like, ah, that was so hard. And I've talked about this sometimes in what I write about, but I think it's like sometimes when I think of like joy, that's really painful. Like when I think of memories of like, when I just have a moment, like a quiet moment to remember hiking with my dad, or like just a fun, pure moment from before everything was bad, I think that is where most of the pain lies, because it's almost too painful to look at that. It's easier to just kind of focus on like what's next or what's ahead. But when I really think about like what I lost and how I lost it, it's too much. And I kind of can't like even look at it.
And what you're saying, because I want to understand it for myself, is that like the memories of those joyful moments might be the thing that brings that back to you. So that there's pain in there.
Yeah, there's a lot of pain, I think, in happiness. I think in joy, that's maybe the worst of grief is when it's like heartbreak, kind of. When I think of my dad being sick and taking care of him, that's like more methodical. But when I think of like being a kid who had a dad and who was safe or something, I feel, yeah. But the anger isn't really, the anger is like, not related at, I think the anger is just anything. It can just be anything. And I can just, and then I'll have therapy and it's like, oh, well, this is probably because you like, yeah, I'll be like the stupid, like package didn't come in on time. And then she'll be like, you were so young. And I'm like, I was so young.
That's yeah. I mean, having talked to people who've lost parents, it's also a thing that I'm putting together for myself. The difference, obviously, between losing a parent and losing a child is like a lot of the grief that you have in your experience, and I hope I'm not articulating this incorrectly, is for the memories that you made together. Of like accessing those memories now is so complicated, because it's not like, you know, you can think about the time you went hiking with your dad and then next weekend be like, hey, Dad, let's go hiking again like we did that one time.
Right.
Whereas for me, it's like the grief is for the memories that I'll never be able to be like, hey, let's make a memory for you. You know what I mean?
Totally. I think that's got to be a big difference, because in my head, a lot of what's brought me peace is like my dad lived such a full life and I got to have an amazing dad for 23 years. And I have to just like, I remember right when my dad was dying, really feeling this sense of like, this whole thing is just a collection of like days, and I got a really great dad for a collection of days. And now I'm going to have a collection of days where he's not around like with me, but I can find peace and comfort in knowing I had such a great dad and that we had such a great time together. Whereas I imagine, right, the pain of like what could have been is a different type of pain that I probably don't think too much about that outside of having my own kids and like him not meeting them.
Yeah. I mean, is that, do you think, you just brought that up, is that something that you do think about? Like how your dad parented you vis-a-vis how you're going to parent your children?
Yeah, I think I feel my dad with me a lot. And so I feel very like I can bring what he brought to me to my kids or to my family or to people around me. So I have him with me and inside of me, which is like a gift. And that means he'll never like really be gone, but I get very sad at like good things and happy things sometimes, because I'm just like, it's too bad that, you know, he's not here for this.
And when you get sad like that, what do you do? Do you try and get unsad, or do you like, let's just have 10 minutes of straight up unabashed?
I'm trying my whole life to get unsad.
Hey, baby.
Yeah, unsad. That's why I'm doing this. That's why I'm, that's the whole thing. That's why I'm on Twitter. that's why I'm buying these oat milk lattes. I'm just trying to get unsad. Yeah, no, I think it depends. I think if I haven't been able to be sad in a while, or if I haven't really spent time with my dad, sometimes getting sad feels like spending time with my dad. So I'll sit in it and write about it, or walk, or feel it. And then, you know, sometimes you just need to feel it, and then I'll like feel some catharsis from it. I would say that's the most, I would say if I really get to a place of feeling sad, it's hard for me to stop until it's just like through my system.
Yeah.
And I think the anger or the other emotions happens when I haven't allowed myself, when I'm overworking or I'm like keeping my life so busy that I have felt a tinge of sad and I've said, nah, I don't have time for you today. I don't have time for you today. I don't have time for you today. And then a collection of those, it's still in me. And then it comes out in like, you know, like, this internet won't work or whatever, you know?
Yes, I am definitely familiar with that. I would say that my kids are probably the most familiar with it, because if I like save up enough of those during the day, there will literally be a time where I'll check in with myself and be like, yeah, I'm definitely going to yell at my kids later. For sure, they're going to get yelled at. They're for sure going to get yelled at.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what comedy is really. I do feel grateful for comedy. I do feel like writing and comedy and that always does feel like poking a hole and letting some of the air out. Like comedy and acting and, you know, writing is that for sure.
Do you think that, I guess your comedy, but also like if your dad hadn't died, do you think that you would be a different performer? Do you think that like, I mean, obviously a different person. That's a very open-ended question. Please answer it.
Yes, I would be a totally, totally different performer. I was lost before my dad got sick. I was doing things I didn't really want to do, but I thought I should be doing. I've always wanted to be an actress. I didn't really say that. I was like, and then my dad died. And I just remember being like, no more fear. You cannot, you've done this. You can do whatever you want to do. Like, just go get the thing you want to get. Don't waste time. You don't have time to waste. So I really think he pushed me to like find joy in what I was doing again and like doing characters and doing like acting stuff that's what I initially loved. And so I was not en route to be doing such joyful stuff for me. I was a depressed kid. I was not like that. Not that I'm not still depressed, but losing my dad really got me out of some funks for sure. Of just like, you don't like your dad didn't get to live. You get to like go do something with your day. You know, he would die for this day. So yeah.
Isn't that like just a crazy thing to be like, I was a depressed kid. And one of the things that helped me with it was the death of my dad.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. And I recommend it to everyone. Anyone who's depressed, I say, listen, I know it's tough, but you got to do it. Find a way, find a guy, he's got to go. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I mean. I know whenever I've struggled with anxiety or depression, my therapist has always been like, well, the first thing I would suggest is finding a way to off your parents.
Right. Well, because sometimes you do have to get a prescription. So I don't do this without the help of a therapist. That's absolutely. So thank you for reminding me. You want to have a therapist on board for this. But yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I can already see the lawsuits just pouring in and the number of people who've been like, well, the podcast told me to murder my parents.
Oh, God.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Can I ask you, what is your dad's name?
Jim.
Jim. And you mentioned this briefly before, but do you still, you mentioned that he was like with you. Do you like talk to him or like, where do you think your dad is? Where's Jim now?
Oh, I feel very sure of this. I help my dad out of bed every morning because he couldn't get up. And I was like, my mom's 4'11". So it was just like, I was the strongest. So I would get him out of bed and I got him out of bed and he had a seizure and he fell down and in bed, like back into bed. And then he fell into a 7-day coma. So it's like, he went from, you know, that was like the last version of him being alive to me. And then he went down and then every day that passed, I watched like more of, you know, him go. And I felt him every day the same amount with me, you know, whether he was like alive. And then once he was right there in a coma, I was like, my dad is right here. He's not talking, but my dad is right here. And so when he died, 7 days later, I felt a very clear like, okay, well, if my dad was right here and I felt him with me when he wasn't talking or was barely breathing, like I can feel him that same way. He's still right there. It's just his body that was not working for him, that had failed him, is gone. But he, the thing that I felt very strongly, is still, you know, right there. So that changed my like faith and my just belief in everything of just like, we are so clearly, you don't disappear. No one disappears. We're all just walking around in these like sacks and like the sacks go, but like we are still in the air and moving and we are like so clearly around, you know?
So is that for you? And maybe it's not like that specific, but like, is he, it's like he's in heaven or it's like he's watching over you or it's like, or just like it's someplace.
Yeah, I guess I just see it as like he's wherever I need him or want him to be, he's there. You know, you can learn Spanish by reading it on a, that's not the right way to say it, but reading it on a page and then it's like in you and then you don't need to look at the page anymore. It's just, you know it. It's kind of like, I just know my dad. I know him. And so even if he's not right there in front of me, like he is, he's with me and yeah.
I want to say two things about that. One is that I don't understand. And the other one is that I kind of do, if that makes sense.
Well, if you don't understand, you'll have to come to my service this Sunday. It's the Church of, yes, yes. I'm starting my own religion. No, I mean, it's, I guess it's just like, I don't know where he is. I don't know where, if he's a conscious part of it. I don't know where my dad is. But for me, like my memory of a dad is in the same way that like if I call my mom, I don't see her body, but I just talk to her on the phone. I hear her voice. It's like a one more extension of that. It's like, okay, I don't see his body and I don't hear his voice, but I know him. I know what he'd say. And my dad used to like go like this a lot with me, like, come on, this. And so like even like just a lot of times if something happens or if so, I'll just go like this. And I just am like, yeah, that's like, I just trust that he's, yeah.
Yeah.
I think you have to. I think you have to think that like we're all close because it's too hard not to. So I think it's easier to think that they're nearby, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's beautiful. Like it's weird again for me. It's obviously different because it wasn't like my son died when he was 34 days old. So there wasn't like, oh, he used to have this funny thing that he always said or whatever. I've always thought of myself as very rational. And I do think of my son as gone. But even though I think that, I don't feel that, if that makes sense. Like it still is a person of the world who is remembered. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes. He influences my every move. So even in that way, he's still around, even if it's just through me.
Yeah. And I'm sure that it's not. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to speak for you, but like a lot of your comedy revolves around your relationship with your mother, which is certainly affected by.
And not only that, but my dad and I, like, which my mom reminds me of sometimes, my dad and I's whole thing was kind of like ribbing my mom. And so to do those together, I remember when the first one did well, or maybe I got written up or something about it. I just remember like laughing and being like walking and being like, Dad, can you believe it? Like us making fun of mom is like going to be the thing that launches my career.
And that's totally true. I mean, like really, and it's not just that, but it's also like, I don't know how many people have seen those videos, but a lot of people, like, you know, millions of people have watched you make those videos. And that's like your dad's sense of humor out to a million people that, you know, might not have happened. Obviously, I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but you would rather your dad be alive. But there's right. That, like, put out into the world, like, that's a way for sure that he exists in the universe still.
Yeah, and I think it's our, sometimes my mom says, like, everything happens for a reason. And I don't really like that phrase because I don't think that that's true. Yeah, because I don't like that because it makes me think, like, oh, my dad had to die for me to, for example, make these videos or something. But I think we have a duty to the dead to like say, this person died and this awful thing happened. It is my duty to like make some light of it. Like it is my duty to use that, like to honor this person's life by making something. Yeah.
I so totally get that. And that's a thing that I've talked about on other episodes of this. And the people I've interviewed have said, some of them have said that exact same thing. Like I specifically don't like it when people say everything happens for a reason, but I do believe that I can make a reason out of this. I can make this into a reason.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. But also like those videos, like truly it was because my mom moved in with me to New York after my dad died because she didn't want to be alone in the house. And then she was with me 24/7 in New York as an adult. And I was like, oh my God, I have to do something because yeah. So it was like almost a direct result of my dad passing away.
Yeah. And now is your mom still in New York?
She teaches in Ridgewood and she lives in Manhattan now. Yeah.
Got it. Love a mom. Always, always rooting for a mom just in every scenario.
Me too, especially a mom like in her 50s, moving, getting a nose ring, going to Manhattan. Hello.
Nose ring.
She got a nose ring.
She's incredible. How do you think you have changed, or the way you feel has changed, from day one when your father died to now? Like the way you feel about it, the way you process it?
You know, I feel a few things. I think the good part, if that's even what I want to say, but the good part of losing someone over a year is like you kind of are processing it a lot along the way. So I feel grateful that like I had that year. You know, when you're slowly watching someone die, it becomes kind of more palatable. Whereas like my dad was so healthy that to see him die right away, I think would have been so jarring. But to kind of watch him and every night be like crying about it and talking to my brother and going on walks and calling my friends, like I think that by the time my dad died, I had processed a lot of what was happening, and I was so grateful that he was no longer in pain because the end was so bad for him that I think by the end, I really remember feeling like a part of me has died with my dad, and now I have this like second life that I am going to live. So I think probably when it first happened, I was like, probably, honestly, that first year, I just was back in New York, seeing friends again, so grateful to like have some lightness in my life because my life had just been so isolated and dark for a year.
Yeah.
And then I think I probably had a year or two in between that it like really hit me and that it was really hard and maybe things were just like a little darker. And then I think I would say the past couple years, I just feel far enough away from it that I can now look at it outside of myself, you know? So it's more of like, I can look at this thing that happened and I can see it and be sad about it, but it's no longer as much. Everything about my life is different. I live in LA. Everything I do every day is different than what my life looked like when my dad was sick or dying. So in a weird way, I now feel like I can just more clearly look at the situation versus feel it all the time.
So it's like, you're able to observe it without being like overtaken by it or whatever. Does that sound right?
I think so. Exactly. Like when the first few years, I think it was just so overwhelming all the time. Yeah. It was such a part of me. It was such a part of me is what it was. So every day it was like that. I had someone tell me that grief is like, you know, a backpack and you just kind of wear it and it gets less heavy all the time, but you're always wearing it. And I think that's a great way to put it. And maybe now it's like a fanny pack or something.
Right. Yeah, because you've become enormous. So now the thing is so small to you.
That's the thing. Yeah. Also, how dare you?
How dare you?
I think that's right, though. In a way, it's like it's not that it gets lighter. It's that you just get stronger and you get more used to carrying it.
Yeah. And it's like that thing on top of 10 other things, like it's all the things that you gradually are carrying more and more of that make you, I can't stop saying, make you enormous. That's, I don't know, I regret it. This analogy is bad for me.
Exactly,
I don't belong here. The question that I will ask you that I think will be our last question is, like, day to day, how do you think you are different having experienced this grief? Like, what do you think has changed in you? I know you talked about that a little bit, but if you could expand on it more.
Yeah, I think that definitely, to what we've talked about, it does feel like an almost whole body difference of just like, I feel totally different. Maybe one main thing is I am so grateful for every friend and every interaction and every call. Like I am very aware of the like maybe fragility of everything. So I am maybe parties that are things I would have said no to before. Like I feel so lucky to have like a second lease on life basically that I'm like very grateful for everything I get to do.
Is that because of the experience of your dad dying, or is that something that your dad would have been about? Like when he was alive, was he like, let's do things. Let's not just sit around the house or whatever.
He was definitely a let's do things kind of person. So that's probably him. And also I just think you grow up thinking you get a guaranteed 90 years. I grew up being like, I have 90 and it's okay if for a few of these I do whatever. And it's like, I'm very aware now, like, though there's no guarantee. It's all just a collection of days. So I have to find something good today. I have to do something today that makes me happy or that is, you know, worthwhile because I don't know what's coming around the bend.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's like almost standard, I think, in that tragedy world to be like, it reframes every experience where you're like, well, I've had worse than this. On top of that, though, that doesn't stop me from like getting, as you have mentioned before, incredibly mad about stuff that absolutely does not matter.
Oh, no, I never get mad about stuff that doesn't. I don't
oh,
know.
Not you?
No, that's no, not me, actually. No, the stuff like really does matter. Like, it's really important that my packages get here.
Yeah.
So
there
no,
actually
this,
cannot
yes.
be cilantro in the soup. That is important to
there
me.
There actually just cannot be cilantro in the soup. Yeah, no, exactly. Like, it doesn't stop me from having like really bad days or for, yeah, getting angry about stupid stuff or letting days waste away or not going and doing things. Like, those things all still happen, but it's, I guess you just make more of an effort for it not to.
And I guess, sorry, that makes me think of another question, even though I promised that would be my last question.
Oh, no, I don't care.
Okay, phew. You were talking about like still having those bad times after like the event has happened. Were there times that you can remember at all during the year between his diagnosis and his death that were, you mentioned going on the run on the 4th of July. Were there other like funny or like fun times that happened, even though it was supposed
to
be bleak?
We didn't even talk about that. That's so true. I mean, like, that was probably, will go down as one of the most like wonderful years of my life. I think, like, even though it was awful, it was four people living together. It was my family living together again. We knew we didn't have a lot of time. So every holiday we made the most special. We like went to Florida, we went skiing, we just basically took the year and like did everything my dad wanted to do. And I mean, so there was some definite lightness in it, but I would say the biggest thing I remember was like the days being really heavy and dark and tense. And then the nighttime, the necessity for like laughter and joyfulness between my brother and I after being like on or going to scans or going to the hospital. Like, if you're on for like, you know, 10 to 12 hours of like real shit darkness, or maybe even 15 or something, I had some of the biggest cry laughs with my brother over, like, I just remember us getting so obsessed with like recycling day. We would just be like, here we go. Okay, recycle. Oh, the beautiful sound of recycling cans. Do you hear that? The people are rolling the cans out. I mean, we just like such, we got so into the suburban, like suburbia. We really, yeah, we just like, my brother and I bonded so much, and like we will always be so much closer because of that. Because yeah, laughter is like, and that's what changed my comedy too, is being like, in darkness, laughter is a true necessity. It is like a release that if you don't have it, you can't survive the next day. Like, you need a break in order to get the pain of the next day. You can't just carry on. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've found that to be so true. And like, things that happened during that time, or like immediately after my son's death, there were like moments where you're just like, this is so absurd. And I mean, like, those are moments between yes. me and my wife, but also me and my family, just like things where you're like, this can't be happening. I think like that recycling stuff that you're talking about is also funny in light of that idea of like, that in my world, my dad is dying, but outside someone's out there just like, the crisp autumn air and just the sound of a can being crushed in a bag.
Totally. Totally. And like, it's so true. Like, I remember too, like the day my dad died, I want to say like hospice or someone brought over a cake, like I'm sorry cake.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those that's like shaped in like a roll and it was brown. And I was like, you guys just brought us a big poop. It was just so like, yeah, exactly. Cause it's like, even if it's the day my dad died, it's like, you almost need it. Cause you're so like, you just need the release of something has to, yeah.
Yeah. It's just the contrast too, of like how bleak your universe is with the rest of the world is just wild. The idea of being like, my dad's dead. Would anyone want a slice of doo-doo cake? Is absurd. Were there
totally?
Does it have like a message written on it on the cake? Is there like a?
Yeah, it's like, what are you gonna write? Like, sorry.
I remember I was doing like research about grief because I'm like a very cool, fun guy.
And totally.
One of the things that I found online was a musical card that on the front says, sorry for the loss of your child. And then you would open it up and it would play a song and you could pick the song that went in there. And just the idea of that is just stunning to me, that you would like send that card, sorry for your loss, open it up, and then like Smash Mouth's All Star plays or something.
That's the thing. Like if you sent that and then it was like, I'm a savage. Yeah. Like, oh God.
Are there things that you do now? Are there anything like, there are certain things, for example, I know this makes me basic, but when I listen to the Hamilton soundtrack, there's a song in there, spoiler, about his son being dead, that like, if I hear that, I'm like, this is it. I'm out for the week. I'm going to take a week off and just not talk to anybody. Is there stuff like that for you where it's like, if I hear this or I see this, I'm going to have to be in a dark room for like a couple weeks?
And I think that almost to me is like, it always lets me know like where I am with grief. Like Luke Combs put out this song called Even Though I'm Leaving. Mm-hmm. And it got to the point where I started putting on makeup like right when I got to my audition, because I would put it on in the car. And then if I heard it, I would lose it, like uncontrollably lose it, because it's basically about a dad being like, even though I'm like dying, I'm still with you. And yeah, Now I don't, because I've heard it enough times that now it's like, but for the first, I want to say 30 times, I lost my mind.
Yeah, I would have like moments on the subway where I would have to put my sunglasses on, and I'm obviously indoors. I'm just like, people can't. I'm not one to like hide my feelings, but someone's going to call an ambulance if they see what I'm feeling right now.
Oh my God, totally. I definitely don't miss that about the subways. People don't talk about that, but the cars here, to just get to cry in a car in LA, it just hits a little different than, crying on the subway, trying my hardest not to let the tears fall. Yeah.
Yeah, on my way to like an audition for a Doritos commercial or something.
Oh, make no mistake. These are all my auditions are on the way to some Frito-Lay product commercial, like for sure. Yeah. But I think like it is, I like when that happens, I think, because it helps me be like, oh, okay, I'm feeling sad and I need to let this out. And this is probably going to make me feel better and everything else. If I keep crying over and over and over about this, eventually I will get through some, the only way out is through it. And I'm like, if you feel it, you kind of can't look to cry and change the channel, I think, or to not cry and change the channel would be a disservice to your grief and to your emotions.
Well, I think it's also like that anger thing that you were talking about, which is you're going to move through it anyway. So like if you try and go like, well, I'll take a left turn at this sadness. The sadness is like, no, there's really only one road and it's this way. So
you could cry, like you could beautifully cry and have an emotional moment, or you could flip out. Yeah. At your waiter. So you decide, why don't you cry here instead of
instead of subjecting a stranger to just screaming for no reason, maybe just let it out right now. Although listen, every once in a while, a good stranger scream is nice. It's nice every once in a while to just scream at someone who doesn't deserve it.
So I think we just want to recap, like, if you're listening to this, here's some things you want to know. You got to kill your parent if you're getting depressed.
Must.
Two, if you're feeling angry, find a stranger and let it out on them. And three, come to my church where I tell you that your dad is sitting right next to you and I can guarantee it.
Yes, you got to get to Alyssa's church. It's one of the best churches out there. Alyssa, I think that's our episode. I wanted to say thank you so much for doing this. People can find you just like every place. You're on all the things. If you will put your name and people can look you up. And Alyssa's so funny and wonderful.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. And I love you. Bye.
A Good Cry is produced by Radio Point and HeadGum, with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Richard Corson, Daniel Powell, and Houston Snyder. Recorded, edited, and mixed by Bree Mattan.
That was a HeadGum podcast.